Hena Prabhu Kota Kela Rachaya Thakora Hena Prabhu Kota Kela Rachaya Thakora Kahamora Sarupa Kasanata Kahamora Sarubrupa Kasanata Kadasa Raghunatha Patita Pavan Kadasa Raghunatha Patita Pavan Kahamora Bhatta Yuga Kavira Kahamora Bhatta Yuga Kavira Eka kale kota gela gora natara Eka kale kota gela gora natara Pasane kutibo mata Anale Pashiba Pasane Kutiba Mata Anale Pashiba Thank you. 고랑가 그네라 니리 코트 게일라이퍼버 고랑가 그네라 니리 코타 게레 파버 세사바 상기라 상게 ye koi lo bila se sa ba sangi ra sangi ye koi lo bila Sesangana paya kande naro tamoda Sesangana paya kande naro tamoda Daya Vaishnava Thakur Vaishnava Thakur Daya Vaishnava Thakur Daya Vaishnava Thakur Daya Vaishnava Thakur Vaishnava Thakur Daya Vaishnava Thakur Jai Vaishnava Thakur Jai Jai Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Prabhupada. Jai Om Vishnu Pad, Paramahansa Parijakacharya, Sota Dasisimad, Divine Grace, Abhaya Charanaravinda Bhakta Vedanta Swami, Shrupad Ki Jai. ISKCON founder Chaudhary Prabhupada Ki Jai. Navadik Maya Purudam Kija, Ganga Marjan Maya Kija, Tulsi Maharani Kija, Bhakti Devi Kija, Samaveda Bhaktivinoda Kija, Goa Premananda. All glorious to the assembled devotees. All glorious to the assembled devotees. All glorious to the assembled devotees. All glorious to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. 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 Pushkar's chastising me for saying it five times. Is that an offense or something? Okay, reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. What, does anyone know exactly which verse? 9:15. Is it 16? Oh, I thought it was the Bhagavad Gita. Okay. All right, we'll say this verse together. Actually, we'll say the verse that I'm giving the class on, which is number 19 together. I'll just go through all these Sanskrit verses. Ekadasham maturame sabratarivanam gate vairam shishadayishabho labta chidra upaikayam. Once when Lord Parashuram left the ashram for the forest with Vasumana and his older brothers, the sons of Kartavirya Arjuna took the opportunity to approach Jamadagni's residence to seek vengeance for their grudge. Text number 11. Trishvagnyagara asinam aveshitadiyam munim bhagavat yutam ashloke jagnushte papa nishchayaha. The sons of Kartavirya Arjuna were determined to commit sinful deeds. Therefore, when they saw Jamadagni sitting by the side of the fire to perform yajna and meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is praised by the best of selected prayers, they took the opportunity to kill him. Text number 12. Yachchamana kripanaya ramam matra didaruna prasaya shira uktkritya ninyaste shatrabandavaha. With pitiable prayers, Ranuka, the mother of Parashuram and wife of Jamadagni, begged for the life of her husband. But the sons of Kartavirya Arjuna, being devoid of the qualities of kshatriyas, were so cruel that despite her prayers, they forcibly cut off his head and took it away. Text 13. Ranuka duka sokata nignantyatmanam atmana rama rame te ta te ti vichukroshukai sati. Lamenting grief for the death of her husband, the most chaste Ranuka struck her own body with her hands and cried very loudly, O Rama, my dear son Rama. Text 14. Tadupashrutya durasta harametya tavatsvanam Tvarayasramam asadya dadrushu pitaramhatam. Although the sons of Jamadagni, including Lord Parashurama, were a long distance from home, as soon as they heard Ranuka loudly calling, O Rama, O my son, they hastily returned to the ashram, where they saw their father already killed. Text 15. Te duka rosa mashati shoka vega vimohita hatata sado damishta tyaktvasman swagato bhavan. Virtually bewildered by grief, anger, indignation, affliction, and lamentation, the sons of Jamadagni cried, O Father, most religious saintly person, you have left us and gone to the heavenly planets. Text 16. Vilapyaivam piturdeham nidhaya pratrishu trayam pragriya parushum rama shatrantaya manodadhe. Thus lamenting, Lord Parashuram entrusted his father's dead body to his brothers and personally took up his axe, having decided to put an end to all the kshatriyas on the surface of the world. Gadva mahismatim ramo brahma gna vihata shriyam tesham sa shri shabhi rajan majye chakre mahagirim. O King, Lord Parashuram then went to Mahismati, which was already doomed by the sinful killing of a Brahmin. In the midst of that city, he made a mountain of heads severed from the bodies of the sons of Kartavirya Arjuna. So we'll do this one all together. Text 18 and 19. Maybe when you do the responsive Sanskrit, you could just do one of the verses each. Tadraktena nidim goram apramanya bayavaham hetum kritva pitrivadam kshatre mangalakarini tri sapta kritva prativim kritva nishatriyam prabhu samanta panchake chakre shonito dan hrida hradanava tadraktena nadim goram abrahmanya bayavaham hetum kritva pitrivadam kshatre mangalakarini tri sapta kritva prativim kritva nikshatriyam prabhu samanta panchake chakre shonito dan radhanava. Okay, word for word, please repeat. Tatraktena, by the blood of the sons of Kartavirya Arjuna. Nadim, a river. Goram, fierce. Abramanya by Avaham, causing fear to the kings who had no respect for Brahminical culture. Hetum, cause. Kritva, accepting. Pitrivadam, the killing of his father, and the whole royal class, Amangalakarini, was acting very inauspiciously, Trisaptakritva, 21 times, Prithivim, the entire world, Kritva, making, Nishatriyam, without a Kshatriya dynasty, Prabhu, the Supreme Lord, Parashuram, Samantapanchake, at the place known as Samantapanchaka, Chakre, he made, Shonita Udan, filled with blood instead of water, Pradan, lakes, Nava, 9, translation. With the blood of the bodies of these sons, Lord Parashuram created a ghastly river which brought great fear to the kings who had no respect for Brahminical culture. Because the Kshatriyas, the men of power in government, were performing sinful activities, Lord Parashuram, on the plea of retaliating for the murder of his father, rid all the Kshatriyas from the face of the earth 21 times. Indeed, in that place known as Samantapanchaka, he created 9 lakes filled with their blood. Please repeat. With the blood of the bodies of these sons, Lord Parashurama created a ghastly river which brought great fear to the kings who had no respect for Brahminical culture. Because the Kshatriyas, the men of power in government, were performing sinful activities, Lord Parashurama, on the plea of retaliating for the murder of his father, rid all the Kshatriyas from the face of the earth 21 times. Indeed, in the place known as Samantapanchaka, he created 9 lakes filled with their blood. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Parashurama is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his eternal mission is Paritranaya Sadunam Vinashaya Chaduskritam, to protect the devotees and annihilate the miscreants. To kill all the sinful men is one among the tasks of the incarnation of Godhead. Lord Parashuram killed all the Kshatriyas 21 times consecutively because they were disobedient to the Brahminical culture. That the Kshatriyas had killed his father was only a plea. The real fact is that because the Kshatriyas, the ruling class, had become polluted, their position was inauspicious. Brahminical culture is enjoined in the Shastra, especially in Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvanyam Mayashristam Guna Kama Vibhagashaha. According to the laws of nature, whether at the time of Parashurama or at the present, if the government becomes irresponsible and sinful, not caring for Brahminical culture, there will certainly be an incarnation of God like Parashuram to create a devastation by fire, famine, pestilence, or some other calamity. Whenever the government disrespects the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and fails to protect the institution of Varnashram Dharma, it will certainly have to face such catastrophes as formerly brought about by Lord Parashuram. Om Agyanatam Randasyaganandanam Shlakaya Chakshura Manatamyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, Varnashram is a very important feature of Vedic culture that Srila Prabhupada wanted to introduce into the modern world, and of course we see some vestiges of Varnashram, but it's only because every human being has the inherent qualities of one of the different Varnas. Otherwise there's no Brahmins, so Srila Prabhupada wanted to create a class of Brahmins. We see many of the Brahmins in India, they're not really Brahmins. They're simply wearing a thread, which you can buy anywhere in India. So Brahminical culture is very important. And actually, Srila Prabhupada said, I was listening to the remembrances yesterday, how Gandhi had tried to introduce Varnashram Dharma. He wanted to help maintain the life of the villages in India. And he was actually cheated, or he was let down by Nehru, who was the first president of India after the British left India, and the British themselves, and they began building factories. So then, you know, the whole idea of simple living, high thinking was lost in India, and India pursued the path of material development. So then Prabhupada was criticizing how many factories there were on the road up to Vrindavan from Delhi, the Dunlop tire factory, and so, you know, he said you can't eat nuts and bolts. So this is the situation. Now we find that the price of food is increasing exponentially. It's going up very rapidly, and there's more and more people going without food because of the leaders of the different countries. They're not qualified to be leaders. They're simply interested in money, material development. They're not understanding the real needs of human society. So Srila Prabhupada wanted to create a class of Brahmins, because without the Brahmins you cannot have the other three Varnas, because the Brahmins, they guide the other three Varnas. And so Srila Prabhupada, he gave devotees in ISKCON the opportunity to become Brahmins, and the Brahmins, they have to be very learned and be able to convince others by their knowledge, not just spiritual Vedic from the Vedas, but also all kinds of knowledge to show people how to do everything in this world. So this is the Brahminical culture, that the Brahmins would teach everything. So this is very essential if we want to see an improvement in the world condition, that the devotees are the only people that have this information. Although when I was in India recently, I met one man, very wealthy man. He was building an institute to teach people. He wasn't a member of ISKCON or anything, but he was a very nice Indian gentleman, very wealthy, and he was quite young, less than 40 probably, and he was growing food himself. Even though he was very wealthy, he was doing some of the labor himself, and he had one of these ox power machines. He was using the oxen to bring the water out of the ground, because he was very interested in teaching people about cow protection and simple living and growing organic food. That was in a place called Kanpur, which the rest of the place was pretty hellish. It's where they make the ammunition for the Indian army, actually, Kanpur. That's where the Indian mutiny took place. Kanpur, same place, because the British made the gun bullets using the fat of the cow, and the Indians mutinied, and the Muslims that were in the army, they mutinied because they'd used some pig fat, and pigs are unclean for Muslims, so there was a mutiny. Anyway, so Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to create a Brahminical society and have Varnashram. This is, of course, very, very difficult to institute in this day and age, because it requires land and it requires people who are prepared to donate money and to establish the different aspects of Varnashram. So we're still hoping that this can happen. It's not very easy, but at least we can teach people, distribute books, and try to convey the message that this is the ultimate lifestyle for the human population, that without guidance by the Brahmins who are conversant with the Vedas, which contain all the information necessary for a peaceful, happy society, then there's no chance of the population being happy. So we see that now so many earthquakes are there, so many floods are there. Every day practically there's a new disaster. If it's not one thing, it's the other. It's a revolution, it's a war. And these things are so uncontrollable. I was looking at something about Krakatoa. If the materialists ever think they're going to control nature, they're just dreaming, because Krakatoa was a big earth, it was a, what's it called? Volcano. And this volcano, you could hear it 3,000 miles away. You can hear the explosion. And the tsunami that was created by the volcano was about 100 feet high. So it was the power of about 40 atomic bombs. So there's no question that science, of course, scientists, they say, you know, and I meet students all the time, that they say, well, in the future we'll be able to make people live much longer, possibly forever, and this is, they've just fooled everybody. So we need to get out there, and we have to tell people, we have to know convincing arguments so that we can actually defeat their arguments, because they have very flimsy arguments and we have very strong arguments. If you've read that book called Nature's IQ, I've mentioned it a few times, now they're coming out with a video of Nature's IQ. There's a trailer of it on Shiva Ram Raj's website. It's very good. So the arguments in Nature's IQ about how human beings could not possibly have developed from a single-celled creature through the process of evolution, the arguments are so convincing and the scientific evidence is so strong that if you know a few simple examples from this literature, then you can defeat all these people if they're not completely fanatical. So, you know, this is Brahminical culture. It's to know the arguments to use. Like Prabhupada, you read Life Comes from Life. Anyone who reads that book with an open mind would have to say that his arguments are so strong that they cannot be refuted. Prabhupada was such a powerful preacher, and one book, one small book, defeated the whole concept of material advancement and evolution. So therefore, we have to know this knowledge, we have to get it out, and we have to give people a chance to hear it, because a lot of people out there are having a lot of doubts about the way the world is going. So, in the purport here, Srila Prabhupada mentions about Varnashram, and so, you know, he talks about the Shastra. So Shastra means knowledge. It also means a weapon. And in the Bhagavad Gita, we hear that Krishna tells Arjuna, therefore, armed with knowledge, slash these doubts, slash this ignorance, fight, armed with yoga. So with knowledge, you have real power. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he appeared, it says, Krishna Varnam Trisa Krishna Sango Pangastra Parshadam Yagyai Sankatam Praya Yajantihi Sumedasha. So he appeared with his associates and with his weapons. So his weapon, according to Srila Prabhupada in the purport of that verse, which is quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, The weapon that he appeared with was his beauty. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so beautiful, and of course Krishna himself is so beautiful, but even the other incarnations of the Lord are so beautiful that anybody who sees them becomes attracted. They're examples of so many personalities that saw the different forms of the Lord that completely fell in love with them. Even the daughters of Varuna, which is all explained in the Garga Samhita, the daughters of Varuna, they saw Matsya, the incarnation of the Lord, and they fell in love with him. And they wanted to have a conjugal relationship with him, even though he was in the form of a fish. It's amazing. The Lord's so beautiful. So they got the benediction that they could be born as gopis in Krishna's Leela. Some other instances were that when in Bahismati, Bahismati, wasn't that mentioned earlier in this passage here? Anyway, when Prithu, so when the women of Bahismati saw Prithu, they fell in love with him. And he was a partial incarnation of the Lord. And they also got the benediction to be born as gopis in Krishna Leela. And when the Apsaras saw Naranarayana Rishi, they also became enamored by him. They also were attracted to that beautiful form. And they also became gopis. And when Vamanadeva performed austerities, the women that saw him, they also became gopis. So these are examples of how the beauty of the Lord conquers. Of course, Krishna, he killed many demons, and Lord Chaitanya did not kill demons, but he defeated through his beauty. So Lord Chaitanya is the Yuga avatar, and he defeated everybody either through his knowledge. He defeated the Kashmiri Pandit. He defeated Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He defeated Prakashananda Saraswati. So he was so attractive, and his pastimes were so attractive. I was just reading today in the Chaitanya Bhagavat with the commentary by Srila Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur, how Lord Chaitanya, he dressed very beautifully, he wore tilak, and he would get so upset if people didn't wear tilak. And then in the purport, there's a whole rundown on the different benefits of wearing tilak. So I don't know if you've read it, but it's quite convincing that you should wear tilak. So Srila Bhakti Sananda, he quotes a Shastric injunction: a Brahmin without tilak should be sat on an ass backwards and driven out of town. In the Narada Muni, in the Padma Purana, he says, if one performs sacrifice, gives in charity, undergoes austerity, studies the Vedas, offers oblations without putting on tilak, all his activities are useless. If a person does not decorate his body with tilak, he is not to be seen. How about that? His body is as impure as a crematorium. In the Brahmanda Purana, it says, if a person who is impure, ill-behaved, engaged in sin with his mind, decorates his body with tilak, he becomes pure forever. So when Srila Prabhupada was giving a concession to devotees to wear kami clothes to go out and distribute books, he said, you know, it took a long time to convince him that they should do that. He wanted everybody to go out in a dhoti and distribute books. And so some people, they say, we shouldn't wear dhotis, you know, this and that and the other. But to me, it's all nonsense. Prabhupada, you know, the man of the century, last century, was Mahatma Gandhi, and he wore a dhoti. The Dalai Lama, he's something like a dhoti. He wears a robe. Of course, so no offense against that book distributors. Sorry about this. So Prabhupada, he gave a concession. Okay, you can wear kami clothes, but you got to wear tilak. You got to wear tilak. And so I was going out when I was in England a few weeks ago. I was visiting my mother, and I was going shop to shop distributing books, and I was wearing tilak. And, you know, one place I went into, the man immediately said, "Hare Krishna, come on in." He was super friendly. Otherwise, if I didn't have the tilak, he wouldn't have known. So, anyway, there's so much benefit wearing tilak. The last thing I was going to talk about was the beauty of the Lord's wedding to Srimati Vishnu Priya, because this is a beautiful passage from the Chaitanya Bhagavat. It's her appearance day today. She was married to Lord Chaitanya. The Lord's beautiful limbs were smeared with sandalwood pulp in which a guru had been mixed. His forehead was smeared with sandalwood paste in the shape of a half moon, and an enchanting tilak mark was drawn through it with our guru. He wore a wonderful crown on his head, and fragrant flower garlands covered his body. He wore fine yellow cloth with three corners tucked in, and his beautiful eyes were decorated with kajal. Durva grass was tied with a thread around his right wrist, and he held a mirror and a fresh banana leaf in his hands. The phrase Rumba Manjari refers to newly grown banana leaves or the middle portion of a banana tree. His ears were adorned with gold earrings, and his arms were decorated with jeweled armlets. In this way, everyone joyfully decorated the Lord's limbs with appropriate items. On seeing the beautifully decorated form of the Lord, all the assembled men and women were overwhelmed and forgot themselves. At mid-afternoon, everyone said, "Now let us begin our auspicious journey. We will pass through the streets of Navadvip for a few hours and arrive at the bride's house right at dusk." At that time, Buddhimanta Khan happily brought an exquisite palanquin for the Lord. Buddhimanta Khan was a Vaishya who had offered to pay for all the marriage expenses. Musical instruments and singing created a tumult, while the Brahmins chanted auspicious Vedic mantras. Professional blessers began to recite various prayers. The whole scene appeared as if bliss personified had advented. Lord Gauranga circumambulated his mother and offered obeisance to the Brahmins. Then, as he got into the palanquin, auspicious sounds of jai, jai were heard in all directions. As the women joined in with sounds of uludvani, nothing other than auspicious vibrations could be heard. The Lord's procession first proceeded to the bank of the Ganges, where the half moon was seen overhead. Thousands of lamps were lit and various fireworks were set off. The procession was led by Buddhimanta Khan's infantry, followed by the city tax collectors. Actually, I went to the wedding of Diana and the Prince of Wales, and it was the best firework display I've ever seen. And they're going to have the wedding of, what's his name? Andrew? No. Harry, what's his name? William, yeah, to that commoner, whatever her name is. It's going to probably be a huge firework display. Then they in turn were followed by people carrying various colored flags. Next came a group of jesters with Pushkar, who dressed in various costumes. They were followed by diverse groups of dancers who all danced jubilantly. Millions of children danced along with the music while the Lord watched and smiled. What to speak of the children? Even the learned scholars gave up their inhibitions and danced. As they arrived at the bank of the Ganges, they sang, danced, and played musical instruments for some time. They showered flowers on the Ganges and offered her obeisances. They then proceeded to happily move through the streets of Navadvip. Everyone was astonished to see this extraordinary marriage procession. They remarked, "We've seen large marriages in the past, but we've never seen anything as opulent as this. The pious men and women of Nadi who saw the Lord's marriage procession all floated in an ocean of bliss. Those Brahmins who had beautiful daughters at home simply lamented. We are most unfortunate. So how could we marry our daughters to such a boy? I offer my obeisances unto the residents of Navadvipa who are qualified to see such pastimes. Oh, well, it's got a description of Vishnu Priya. I'll just read this quickly. Well, it doesn't say that much. Vishnu Priya, who was nicely decorated, was then carried on a seat to the marriage arena. Thereafter, the Lord's relatives, relatives joyfully lifted him by raising his seat. After circumambulation, Vishnu Priya came before the Lord and offered him obeisances. All the ladies then showered flowers on the couple, and the two groups of musicians began to play. As the men and women offered all praise from all sides, it appeared as though the personification of happiness had incarnated there. The universal mother, Vishnu Priya, then offered a flower garland to the Lord and surrendered herself at his lotus feet. Then Lord Gaurachandra sweetly smiled as he offered a flower garland to Vishnu Priya. Thereafter, Lakshmi and Narayan happily showered flowers on each other. Unseen by common people, the demigods, headed by Brahma, joyfully showered flowers on the couple. Jaya. Hare Krishna. Any questions, comments, corrections, Pushkar? Yes, Prabhu.
Hanibo.
Hey,
just on that.
You're an exception to the rule about two.
On the Dodi Karmi clothes things, a couple of things. One thing was really cool in St. Louis, years and years ago, when they were trying to, you know, make the airports legal. The city of St. Louis said, "Okay, you can come and distribute your books in our airport, but you can never wear your traditional garb."
Oh, I see.
And so we thought about it for about 2 seconds and thought, okay, we'll take that. So we signed on that. And the nice thing about it is now years later, when all the airports are closed except for Chicago,
St. Louis,
and San Francisco, but there's a million groups working it. Uh-huh. St. Louis still has that,
right?
Because the city of St. Louis said they can do it.
Uh-huh.
The only stipulation was you have to wear regular clothes. Now, another funny thing is back in 73... one of the presidents got the bright idea, and I think he found it as a quote, that the devotees should dress like gentlemen in a suit and tie.
Uh-huh.
And shaved head and tilak.
Right.
So here we go out to the airport with suits and ties and shaved heads and tilak.
Uh-huh.
And I want to tell you, people made circles around us in the airport. We didn't have dhotis, but we had the monk head. And so when you're walking around in a three-piece suit in an airport with a shaved head in it, not a shaved head, it's got a ponytail. So you got your Sika and your Tilak, and we couldn't give a book to people. They wouldn't. They were afraid. It looked like we just got let out of some kind of an institution. I mean, you know, if you're out there in a robe and a shaved head, they go, all right, he's a Buddhist, he's a monk, he's whatever. But you're standing out there in a three-piece suit looking like that. It lasted one day. And we just said, let's go back to, we put on either a hat or whatever.
I mean, nowadays, shaving your head is...
I do wear tilak. I put it on in the morning. I don't reapply it before I go out on Sankirtan, but I like to see it myself. It reminds me of Krishna.
Right.
But your experience of walking in with tilak on and they just surrender to your feet, that's pretty good. I'd like to try that someday, because I've never experienced that in 4 decades of doing it.
That was a one-off.
I'm glad to see you're out there doing Sankirtan.
No, thank you.
We need more of it.
Well, I'm lucky because I just go to... you know, where young people are, they're more broad-minded, so it's okay for me to wear a dhoti and tilak. It's easier. But
well, I did it with Vaish and Haight Ashbury last year.
Yeah?
We went out on the street in dhotis, because he likes to go in dhoti a lot. And I really liked it, except I froze. I mean, I had, you know, it was San Francisco.
Right.
It was cold.
Yeah, yeah.
And we had coats and hats and mittens and, you know. But in a dhoti and a shaved head, you know what I'm saying? It looks normal.
Yeah, yeah. Mother Lakshmi Muni?
Just two little things. Long time ago, maybe Akuti will remember, we actually did a skit of it in here. We had two girls out on Sankirtan, a Christmas marathon, and one of them didn't want to wear tilak, and the other one wore tilak. And the one who didn't wear tilak was a bigger distributor, and she was sure that the tilak on would make it less. So They both approached the same person, unbeknownst to each other. The first girl that approached was the one without tilak on. And it was a hick lady in an old jalopy truck. And she said, you know, whatever. She said, we're distributing these books and candies for our, you know, church or whatever for Christmas. And the lady said, oh, I give it my own church, and I don't need to give you anything. So she went away, and another girl, the other girl with tilak, went to the same woman just a few minutes later. And the lady said, what's that stuff on your head? And she said, oh, it means that my body is a temple of God, and I'm using it in his service. And the lady said, oh, that's really nice. Mm-hmm. And so then she got to talk to her, and the lady took a book and gave a donation.
That's
nice. So right. It does happen.
Mm-hmm. No, it really happened. We just acted.
Now, one guy, when I went to the shop recently, he said, oh, you dropped some paint on your forehead. But I just thought, well, this guy's really dumb. Doesn't really look like paint, let's face it. Well, the other one I went into just a couple of weeks ago in England was a hairdresser, and I was got my tilak, so she knew I was kind of from an Indian kind of culture. And she said, oh, I've just come back from India. This is great. I loved it there. What books have you got, you know? So I showed her the books, and she bought several books. She was nice. Yeah.
I want to make two comments. Last year I was in New York, and they have a restaurant in New York Temple. So once a week, I will go out dressed in a sari and a tilak and everything to pass out invitation, and I took some books out. And many people who met the Hare Krishna when they were teenagers, and I haven't seen them for a long time. So Brooklyn is very, very busy, you know, the streets in the summer. And many people were asking, where are you guys? Where are you? And yeah. I said, we still go out. He said, I never see you in dress like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, when people see us, they also recognize we're the Hare Krishna, so we're dressed like that. So I was thinking. Another thing is, there was a show on TV recently where the villagers in India were given lots of chemicals to put on the land to grow vegetable. I don't know if you saw it, the show was very thing. And they were showing that these people did very well for, I don't know, 2 or 3 years because the chemical made everything grow really big and fast and good. And so the people went out and they took lots of loans out, you know, and they bought all these machines and all this stuff. And then two or five years later, the land was completely depleted.
Yeah, super weeds.
Yeah, it was so bad that lots of the people committed suicide. The suicidal rate was so high that the government had to step in and stop the chemicals, and the people had to go back to using, you know, like neem thing that they were doing really well.
Well, still using tractors and killing the oxen.
Right.
India is the second biggest exporter.
It was just a shame because they had to have the youngsters here, the Indian children, students over here had to go back to India and teach them how to do organic farming again.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really sad situation. So.
Yeah, it is. Sad everywhere. Anyway, Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.